This is a recording of the open meeting of the Federal Election Commission held on December 6th, 2012. Should have questions if they're listening to the recording, please call the FEC at 1-800-424-9530 or email us at info@fec.gov.
The next and last item on the agenda for today is the Audit Division Recommendation Memorandum on McCain-Palin 2008 and McCain-Palin Compliance Fund. Presentation this morning.
Yes.
Whenever you're ready. Thank you.
Good morning. Before you is the Audit Division Recommendation Memorandum for the McCain-Palin 2008 McCain-Palin Compliance Fund. The memorandum recommends the Commission find the method of billing the press during a campaign did not result in material harm. The memorandum also recommends the Commission find that McCain-Palin Compliance Fund, Inc. failed to file 48-hour notices for contributions totaling $240,700 that were received prior to the general election. We're ready to take any questions.
Thank you. Commissioner Bowerly.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a couple of questions that deal with the travel issue. We had a hearing with the committee earlier this year on this issue, and I'd like to ask our Office of General Counsel and the Audit Division about the recommendation that's in this memorandum. The recommendation is the Commission find the method of billing the press during the campaign did not result in material harm. And I'm hoping to get a little more information about what material harm, what that standard means in this context.
I'll try to start off on that, and then I will turn it over to our colleagues in the Audit Division. After the public hearing, it struck us that where the Commission seemed to be, judging from the comments of commissioners during the hearing, was that the finding in the draft final audit report could be approved if the auditors could be more specific about whether and the extent to which any of the following things had happened. One, the general committee effectively subsidized the primary committee, which would be an impermissible use of public funds for the privately funded primary committee. Or if two, the primary committee effectively subsidized the general committee, which would be a receipt of private funds by the publicly funded general, which it couldn't do, or if the general committee essentially had accepted private funds from the press, which also would be in the realm of accepting impermissible private funds, not to mention the fact that it would, you know, while it's not the primary issue here, we do have this rule, and that also tries to keep the general, for the press from being, to be colloquial about it, from being ripped off by a committee. So we advised the auditors that we thought they ought to address all of that in the ADR. And I will let them discuss their conclusions, but I understand them, if I'm correct, to be that while the methodological issue, we haven't really changed our position on, and neither have they, that in terms of that level of harm, they either, for those three things, either couldn't find any or perhaps with respect to one or two of them, maybe we're able to find some, but not that rising to a level that in their auditing judgment would be material. And I'll turn it over to the auditors to expand on why they reached that conclusion.
Yeah, that's correct. In the first instance or the first circumstance with the press materially subsidizing the campaign, we went back and we looked at those press entities that traveled in the general period versus who traveled in the primary period, and essentially there were a lot of they were the same entities in most cases. There were some that only flew in either. But the amount of reimbursement due to those organizations was low on both sides, so we didn't come up with any sort of material result there. And then number two, the general committee exceeding the expenditure limit, we determined that through the course of the audit that there was no limitation issue whatsoever. And then in the third area, the primary committee financing the general committee, we kind of stepped back and took a broader perspective, a broader look at our calculations, looking through kind of the prism of what happened at the hearing as far as looking at the numbers holistically over the entire campaign. And if you did that, then there probably was not an imbalance in the amount owed back to the press.
One general comment on this, the hearing process. From my perspective, and others may disagree, we set up this hearing process so that committees would have a chance to come in and discuss issues in the audit with the commission. I have never personally viewed this as a place where I need, as a commissioner, to identify my positions on particular things, because I want to actually be open to making sure I can hear everything that the committee was. So it's not clear to me that while some commissioners may choose to identify their particular legal positions or conclusions as to facts during an audit committee and or audit hearing, they're entirely entitled to do that. I think it, from my perspective, I try to be open-minded, and I usually want to take time to reflect on what I heard and understand and go back and look at things more. So I think, frankly, it's a little difficult to say that the audit hearing in every instance would coalesce the issues and that you would have a firm view of what at least I as a commissioner would be thinking. I think that's one of the challenges with this process, is that you can, you know, it also could be the fact that, you know, if the schedule happened to work out where someone was unable to come, or there were some instance where they wouldn't come, that commissioner's views would then somehow not be included at all in your further thinking on things. So I think that it would be just a sort of a general area of caution into what to read into that, at least as far as I'm concerned, and others might have different views about that process. But I try to remain as open as possible to the arguments that the committee is making and want to reflect on those after the fact. But as I understand your explanation, you basically went through each of these, and while there was some subsidization from the press, you don't think it was significant enough to be material? Is that your...
Looking at it over the course of the entire campaign.
Oh, both campaigns, mm-hmm. Even though this audit is only for the general campaign.
Correct.
Did you ever boil that down to a number? The regs, you know, have 110% as the limit for reimbursements. Did you come up with a number that you think
when you combine
to that you can attach to the general?
Yes, we did. And when you combine the primary and the general for Swift Air, it actually comes down to the press underpaying by $67,000.
Right, but we didn't audit the primary.
Correct.
So in the general, did we do that? If we didn't, that's fine. I'm wondering if you did a calculation to figure out how much was in the general.
For the general, if we don't take into consideration any of the other modes of transportation used in the general, you're looking at $537,000. When you take into consideration all the modes of transportation used in the general, that's how we come up with the $344,000 that's in the audit report.
Right. I was trying to understand whether we're at all close to the 110% set forth in the regulation, or if it's they were reimbursing at 180% of the cost. We do allow in the regulation for a little more, because obviously there's staff time, there's a lot of other things that can get rolled into that we obviously don't require the campaigns to wind up funding the press's travel either. This is trying to approximate some.
I hope I'm understanding this correctly, but the committee billed on 106%, okay, which was under the 110. When the audit did its calculation, we based it on 110%. But when you combine both areas,
so you're saying the 300 is what's over
correct.
over
the 110.
Got it. Okay. Okay. I think those are all my questions for now.
Madam Vice Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm a little confused. If the audit only covered the general, why, and the general is a different entity from the primary campaign. For one thing, one was publicly financed, one was privately financed. So have we ever, you know, have we ever done this before where we combine the primary and the general period during an audit of one or the other and drew our conclusions based on the entire campaign rather than the piece that we're actually auditing?
I think this is the first time we've kind of had the situation where one was publicly funded and the other one was privately funded in under Title 26 or Title 2 for that matter. But so yes, it's a unique circumstance. So you know, when we went out and did the audit, we were focused on the general committee. But we knew full well that one of the explanations in the contract itself that the committee signed was for the entire period. So we did a little extra work to try and look at it and have the information for us to be able to provide everyone the perspective of the entire campaign.
And I appreciate the work that you did, and I know that it also was raised in the audit hearing. But I guess my question is from a Maybe it's really from a legal standpoint. Is it appropriate to combine the two periods of time when applying our regulations about whether it's above or below the 110%?
Madam Vice Chair, I would say I think that our view of what's legal has not changed from the advice that we had provided the audit division at the time of the DFAR. That we're not saying that the committee used necessarily a reasonable method or that people ought to do what the committee did in future campaigns.
That may not be a problem.
And that may not be a problem. You're right. I think there's a difference in terms of making a judgment about legality and making a judgment about materiality. And we would defer to the auditors on whether or not in their auditing judgment a particular level of harm is material or not.
Well, materiality could be a legal threshold. I mean, it is a term that lawyers talk about. But you're saying that in this context, it's not a legal determination?
It's an auditing determination.
It's an auditing determination as to whether it's material. And I want to be clear about I guess I go back to the question that Commissioner Bowley had at the beginning about what it actually means to say that it didn't result in material harm. The 300,000 plus discrepancy? Would that be a what would be the best way of describing that?
Refund due the press?
Well, that number, okay. If you looked at that as a proportion of the entire press payments that were, I think, the subject of this audit, it was something like $4 million. Is that right? Press travel payments?
Yes, $4 million.
So I mean, I don't know whether this is the appropriate calculation to make, but I mean, sort of my shirt cuff calculation of $300,000+ out of $4 million sounds to me like maybe it's an 8% roughly discrepancy there. I certainly wouldn't be on board with a conclusion that 8% is not a material difference. Is that what you're saying, or is that not what you're saying?
Well, I don't think we looked at it from the 8% perspective. We took it straight from the regs, and it would be the 110%. And anything over the 110% is considered, that's the threshold. That is due back.
And it is over 110.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't
think... For looking over just the general period. So that's where the
right.
340,000 comes from.
But that's what you were auditing, was the general.
Exactly.
So in order to get to the conclusion that there's no material harm, you have to look at you have to combine the primary and the general periods, despite the fact that one was publicly funded and one was privately funded, and they are, you know, legally separate operations.
Legally, yes.
And they have different contribution limits, and they have different, all of the other restrictions that come to bear are separate for those two, mm-hmm. for the primary and for the general.
Correct.
Right. Mm-hmm. So what's the rationale for combining them?
Well, I think in a large part it was in response to the committee's response to the original issue when we brought it up during field work, and then they, of course, also brought it up during the hearing. And upon the guidance of the Office of General Counsel, we went back and looked at it from a different perspective, looking over the entire campaign and combining the primary and the general and trying to determine whether or not there were harm in those three areas.
Not an entirely satisfactory answer for me, because what I'm hearing from different people in the building, and we ought to try and at the end of the day the audit report has legal conclusions as well as auditing conclusions in it, is that legally we seem to think that these are two separate periods of time covering two, then they ought to be kept separate. But for auditing purposes, for the purpose of this audit report, we're combining them in order to reach this conclusion that there's no material harm.
In this recommendation, we are. But in the actual audit report by the staff, the conclusion is the $340,000 to be paid back to the press.
Commissioner Walther.
Well, just is this mostly just a result-oriented analysis? Because, let's be candid, and I thank you for your candid comments, but why would we use materiality and stretch that over two campaigns when we talk about legally, we're really only talking about the general?
Again, we did it in response to the hearing, and the guidance that we received from the Office of General Counsel was to go back and look at it from a more global perspective and try and determine whether or not the calculations and the math would, and what kind of answer we would get in each of those three areas that we have in the recommendation.
Well, so your legal analysis initially was we would look at it straightly for the general only.
Exactly. The legal analysis that was performed on the auditor's reports were based solely on the general committee. Okay. However, the issue was brought up very early during audit field work, and then we've been bouncing it around for a very long period of time.
But then Mr. Calvert's just telling us he agrees that really from a perspective of analysis, maybe we should be looking at the general, except if we may be looking at it on a materiality basis. And I'm not sure where's the legal basis for doing that, to defining materiality over a period of both campaigns.
I think that's a legal question.
Well, actually, I think the reg is actually doesn't go into exactly how you do it when you have two campaigns using one single transaction. And the problem that we had is that the auditors had one calculation and the committee had another calculation. Then you have a regulation that allows the committee to take a reasonable estimate. So when you have a divergent calculation and there's no guidance, you know, it's very hard to say that the committee is incorrect in the way they did it and the auditors are correct, or vice versa. So that's what we actually have. So you have this divergence in calculations, but the reg allows them to take a reasonable estimate. So if you have a divergence in calculations, it's very hard to say that theirs is wrong. But if you use the auditor's calculation, you could say, yeah, that the press, you know, subsidized the campaign, or maybe you could say that one committee subsidized the other. But you just have a difference in calculations. There's no guidance to actually how you do the calculation in terms of what is the actual cost.
Madam Vice Chair.
I'm not sure about that. Because it seems to me that there is a legal question there, and there is a legal answer to it as to whether, I mean, I understand completely from the campaign's perspective, they've got one contract, and, you know, with the benefit of hindsight, you can see exactly how many hours were used, and obviously they were making this determination on an ongoing basis of, you know, based on estimates of how many hours they were going to be using each week. That's always complicated. I get that. We don't want to be second-guessing them with the benefit of hindsight. Having said all of that, there's, you know, this question of what's the time period? You know, does it include the just the general, or does it include the primary and the general? It seems to me that that is ultimately a legal question that I think there is an answer to, and that that legal answer has to inform the audit report's conclusion.
I think that is a legal question, but if you look at the regulation, it doesn't say when you have this type of transaction, you have to base it solely on one committee. It's not that specific. It just what 9004.6B1 says is that you need to determine the pro rata, and you can use a reasonable basis to determine the pro rata. But there's no engagement with respect to what happens when you have a single transaction that involves more than one committee, and that's what we have here.
Well, I mean, it's not a single transaction. It was a contract with a single vendor, but it's not. I mean, obviously, every week they made a new calculation.
No, not in the sense of making payments as a transaction, but overall a contract that involves two committees. That's what I mean by a single transaction. But the commission wants to say that as a matter of policy, whenever you have a situation where you have more than one committee, we're going to rely solely on the calculation with respect to that committee that's subject to the audit, then I think that's a policy question the commission determined. But I don't think that's currently in the regulation.
You had the cite there just a second ago. Can you remind me again?
9004.6B1 and B2.
Thank you.
Madam Vice Chair.
Okay, so let me ask you a question about that. So it starts off, 9004.6A starts off talking about expenditures by an authorized committee. An authorized committee. Are the primary and the general committee together an authorized committee, or are they two separate committees?
No, I think it's one separate committee, but...
No, it's either two separate committees, is it?
It's one committee.
It's one committee, okay.
But I think the dispute here is not 9004.6A. The dispute is 9004.6B1 and B2. That is the regulation that tells you how to calculate pro rata share. The problem that we have is if you look at B2, it does not define what is actual cost. And that's the core here. What is the actual cost? So are you going to base actual costs on, you know, viewing it with respect to one committee or two committees?
Well, which is it? Is it one committee or is it? Now, first you just said it was one committee. Is it one committee or is it two committees?
No, that's what I'm saying. You know, the committee looked at it with respect to what? The committee looked at it with respect to a whole one transaction involving two committees. The auditors broke it apart as, you know, two committees. And that's how they got divergent calculations in terms of how do you calculate actual costs.
Is it one committee or is it two committees? There's got to be an answer to this question, right?
Is what one committee or is what two committees?
The primary and the general, the entire McCain operation, okay? Was it one committee or was it two committees?
It's two committees.
It's two separate committees.
Yes.
Okay. That's what I thought. Just wanted to be clear. Everybody agrees on that? It's two separate committees?
It's two committees.
Okay. So I think 9004.6B has to be informed by 9000.46A, which starts out talking about expenditures by an authorized committee. What in B would make us think that now we're talking about more than one authorized
committee? Because this transaction involves more than one committee. And we need to determine actual costs. If there were three committees for some reason, then we would still need to determine actual costs. And so how do you divide it when you have more than one committee? That's the question. How do you determine actual costs? I think it's pretty easy. It's pretty straightforward if you have one committee. But they didn't have a transaction that had one committee. They had a transaction that had two committees. And so I'm not saying that, you know, what the auditors did is correct, but I'm also not saying what the committee did is correct because they can use a reasonable estimate.
Commissioner Bowerly.
So is it the General Counsel's office position that they exceeded 110% or not? I hear your point about reasonable estimate, but at the end of the day, we have a reg that says you can only seek reimbursement up to 110%. So now I'm confused. I thought there was some agreement that they exceeded that and the way we were going to deal with it. Because I think stepping back from this, there's a legal question, and then there's what do you do about it if it's wrong? And the what do you do about it seems to me, from my perspective, to go to this idea of material harm, whatever the harm might be from this. And maybe that's where this comes into. But we have a threshold legal question of did they exceed the 110%?
I believe the answer to that question is yes. If you look at the general committee and you look at the allocation methodology, they exceeded 110%. That's correct.
Okay.
But the question becomes whether or not the committee used an unreasonable methodology in arriving at the number they arrived at. The auditors have their view as to what's the correct methodology. The committee's argument was their methodology was not unreasonable. And looking at whether or not that was a valid argument, we suggested to the auditors that they look at whether or not ultimately there was any material harm in determining whether or not the committee's methodology was unreasonable. But to answer your question, yes, they exceeded 110%.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And I hear the argument of, and I agree with Commissioner Weintraub, is this is all easier after the fact when you're, you know, paying bills on the fly. And, you know, I'm not suggesting what they did was unreasonable as a way of running the operation. But our question is, what the agency has to decide is whether they complied with this requirement of not seeking reimbursement over 110%. The fact that it was perhaps another, a not unreasonable at the time that they did it, seems to me to go towards what do you do about it if it's a problem. But it seems to me that we have a problem under the reg in terms of the amount of reimbursement.
I think that's correct.
Thank you.
Commissioner McGann.
So, question, it's not going to sound related, but it is. The joint fundraising committees, did they raise primary money?
Yes, I believe so.
So yes. If the audits of the general committee, then what were we doing looking at joint fundraising committees that were raising primary money?
Well, that was that we went back historically to see whether under Title 26 and the authority that we had to audit them, whether we should do the joint fundraising committees or not, and the determination was made back then that they would be included.
Right.
So it was kind of historical. We've done it in the past.
When you used the elusive passive voice, that the determination was made by the auditors, not the commission. The point I'm making is this idea of some rigid line between the primary committee here and the general committee here. If that's the case, why is no one jumping up and down about the joint fundraising committees? Because it seems to me if we're going to draw a bright line and say, well, the fact the committee used one contract to figure out how to pay the media, if that doesn't fly, then how can we have something in the audit report for something that isn't general election? It's primary. I mean, it's for the sake of argument, is somehow related. Let's assume the auditors were proper in doing it. There's other examples where this rigid line and this question of one or two committees doesn't really matter, right? I mean, isn't this part of the same sort of the way you do things? Sort of not a trick question. I mean, I'm sort of backing you up here on looking at the, you know, you have one contract that sort of extends primary to general. The joint committees are kind of in the same ballpark, aren't they? I mean, it potentially would have affected the general campaign, but it didn't. So,
yeah, I mean, our focus was the general period, and the joint fundraisers were added as discussed. And I believe, if I remember correctly, the commission was informed that we were adding those to the scope of the audit at the time. So.
Well, informing is not the same as commission approving. I'm not beating up on this point. This was not you. It was your predecessor, just to put a fine point on it. And I'm not using this format to pick on that decision per se. The point I'm making, though, is even within this audit, there's activity that was not general election activity that was part of the audit and is in the audit report. Right?
Correct.
Right.
Correct.
Has there ever been an example where we've taken a contract that goes from one to the other, from, you know, where they've tried to bridge a decision on what happened during the primary versus the general?
Specifically,
maybe your audits don't, you know, audits in the past are all merged, are they? I don't know if they are or not. Are they? You have an audit for the primary and an audit for the general?
Well, specifically with air travel, you know, I think this is the first time that we've had a publicly and a privately funded campaign where this has occurred.
Right, but in the old days, when everybody was taking public financing, you audited it. What did you do? Did you audit separately, or did you audit?
We looked at them separately. Back then,
right.
And then
so,
especially since the bright line regulations, I think we've not only travel but in other areas we've really separated the two entities.
Right. Well, I would assume that. I was just wondering what policy did you follow in the past when you had something like this? You had a lease or some rent obligations or something. Rent probably wasn't a big issue, but say a lease or anything that had variable monthly payments. Did you have any experience with that even in those days when you had? You know, you're doing both?
Yeah, we would, you know, sometimes there's like security deposits and things like that attached to rent contracts and whatnot. And in those cases, we would calculate how much is owed back to the primary and vice versa if it went the other way. So we kind of reconciled it out between the two campaigns or committees, I should say.
Any other questions or comments? I believe that at least three commissioners are prepared to vote, but I don't. Okay, my understanding is that not everybody's prepared to vote at this moment, and some people have to leave for a previous engagement. So we're going to take a recess for lunch and come back a little bit late at 2:30. I hope that's okay for everybody. So without objection, we will stand at recess and return at... Does that work? Does that time work for everybody? Okay, we'll return at 2:30. Thank you. Good afternoon. The commission meeting for Thursday, December 6, 2012 is back in session. Thank you for joining us again. When we went on our break last time, a little while ago, I was speaking with counsel to the committee, Mr. Sanderson and Mr. Keith Davis, and I wanted to apologize to them that they would have to come back yet again after lunch, and they said at that moment that they would like to address the commission on this issue. My understanding from the Office of General Counsel is there's no procedure for or against that, but that if it's the will of the commission, then that's okay.
They may address the commission if there are four votes that permit them to do so, yes.
Okay. I'm in favor of allowing the committee to address the commission at this time. I realize that we've already had an audit hearing on this issue, but there's a new document that's been released since then, and because council requested to do so, I'm in favor of it. And I believe that there are at least three people that are willing to allow that. Commissioner Walther?
Well, she worked me over pretty good. And my concern is starting a new rule that, becomes the order of the day. But I think in this case, I mean, we've taken 4 years. I think we can take 15 minutes. I did suggest that 15 minutes might be appropriate to give us your legal arguments on what you'd like to, what we're missing, what you think we're missing. So I'd support that.
Okay. Do we need a formal motion?
I think a formal motion would be advisable, yes.
Was that a... yes, there's a comment before the motion, Madam Vice Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm not going to support the motion. We worked out an arduous process. It took us a year to come up with a process for these audits. It allows for... multiple opportunities for council to interact with the commission on paper and in person. We had an audit hearing, and I think we are at the decision point. I'm not aware of any other adjudicators who, when they're at the decision point, say, oh, council, you want to come on down and give us one last shot before we make up our minds? And I'm generally opposed to sort of ad hoc changes to our procedures, so I will vote no.
Commissioner Bowerly.
Thank you. I share the concerns with respect to both the procedure and the actual substance. We had a hearing. It was, and I think that the audit hearing process is a good tool. It's useful to give people a chance to come in and explain their legal positions during the audit process. But we're past that point now, and I don't think the issues before us are going to be illuminated by anything council might have to say. The discussion this morning was really focused on what the audit division recommended and its own analysis and their general counsel's analysis that supported that.
Thank you. Is there a motion? Commissioner McGann?
I guess so. I move that representatives of the audited committee are permitted to appear before us and address issues that they think may be salient in light of our discussion earlier concerning this audit.
Thank you. And one commissioner requested that it be short. Thank you. All those in favor?
Is that the motion, that it be 15 minutes?
Is that a friendly amendment, that it be 15 minutes?
Sounds friendly to me. I hope it takes five.
It's friendly enough for me, too.
Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
The motion passes 4-2. Mr. Sanderson?
Well, thank you, commissioners, for allowing me to address a few issues that were touched on earlier this morning during the first part of the hearing. As was mentioned, we've been discussing these issues for 4 years, so I will keep my my remarks relative to two different issues that I saw that were key, and they will be, and my remarks will be brief. During the initial session, the commission staff was asked whether it was appropriate to consider the primary portion of the Swift Air contract, given that the commission was auditing the general committee and not the primary committee. I did want to share with you, the committee does not and has never argued that the auditors should expand the scope of their inquiry in order to agree with the committee's position. As we see it, the question at issue is, what is the total actual cost of each travel segment that occurred during the general election period? Now, as we've said in our filings, how do you figure out what the total actual cost is? Either predicting the total actual cost, what it will be, or in hindsight, saying what it was. Well, the total actual cost is made up of variable costs and fixed costs. The single most significant fixed cost for the general committee was the $6.3 million contract for an airplane that it held, for a jointly held asset in the form of an airplane. It was an asset that it held jointly with the primary committee. This is not a novel situation. Multiple committees frequently share single assets, and the commonality of that arrangement is really reflected in the commission's rules, in principles. It is forwarded over the years and in several precedents. So what the committee was trying to do was figure out how much of, in aggregate, how much of the $6.38 million should be borne by the general committee. And in the absence of a rule, it looked to several different principles that the commission has forwarded in the past, such as benefit derived. The commission staff actually seemed to recognize that the committee's calculation reflected the benefit derived by saying in the preliminary audit report that the campaign's calculation method reflects the comparative actual use of the aircraft between the primary and general committees. So that was the logic behind the calculation method. That was recognized, in our opinion, by the commission staff as being valid. Another place that the commission's typically looked on how to allocate costs for a joint asset held by multiple committees, they've also looked at gap principles, and that has been an endorsed approach in at least one past audit situation. The staff was also asked this morning, one other place that the committee looked for to determine its calculation method was actually past audits. The committee staff was asked this morning whether it had ever been the case where they saw a contract that straddled the primary and general election periods. Well, as we note in our filings, that actually was the case, and the committee's compliance staff did rely on the past acquiescence of audit staff. In the Bush 2000 campaign, there was a very similar type of contract. It was the total actual cost for each travel segment for that contract was calculated in an identical manner by the same exact people involved in 2000 and in 2008. So we believe that is a matter of precedent. That's one issue that I wanted to address. The other issue was the commission staff was asked whether the committee had received more than 110% of the total actual cost in the form of reimbursement for the press. We do not believe that's the case, and the reason why is an issue of timing. Inherent in the rule is, when will the commission make this determination? When will it decide whether the general committee has received more than 110% of the reimbursement that it's entitled to? Well, what we're saying is, though it may be the case now, that determination is premature because the allocation of the cost has not yet been rebalanced. The Office of General Counsel recognized that the General Committee received reimbursements from the press, quote, for a portion of the travel costs that the Primary Committee paid to Swift Air for primary campaign transportation attributable to the primary campaign. In other words, the General Committee at this time still has money that is attributable to an outlay made by the Primary Committee. We would ask that before the commission makes a determination on whether the committee has received more than 110% of the reimbursement value, that it be afforded an opportunity to rebalance the reimbursements and return the primary funds to the primary committee. Those are the two issues that I wanted to address. I'm happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you. And there's 9 more minutes left on the 15-minute clock. So any other?
I tried to keep it to 5.
You did good. It's close. Any questions or comments for Mr. Sanderson? Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Any other comments? Is there a motion? Commissioner Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move approval of the Audit Division Recommendation Memorandum on McCain-Palin 2008 and McCain-Palin Compliance Fund as set forth in Agenda Document Number 12-77.
Thank you. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye. Opposed?
No.
No.
Motion fails 3-3. Any other motions? Madam Vice Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think we'll try breaking up the issues. Maybe we'll find some agreement on something. I'll make a motion, and then I'd like to make one comment about the motion. The motion is I move that the Commission find the General Committee received press reimbursements during the general election campaign period which exceeded the maximum allowed under 11 CFR section 9004.6B. And my comment on the motion is that this doesn't this is just a legal conclusion. I think this is the legal conclusion that our lawyers came to. I think it's also the conclusion that our auditors came to, and then they went beyond that in their recommendation to say what the consequence of that should be. This doesn't say what the consequence is. This doesn't say what the remedy is. I personally would not be in favor of the General Committee reimbursing the Primary Committee. I think if there were to be a remedy, the money would more appropriately be reimbursed to the press. But this doesn't really get there. The motion doesn't address what the next step is. It just seeks to establish the point of law.
Any other questions or comments on the any other comments on the motion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. Motion fails 3-3. Any other motions? Madam Vice Chair?
Thank you. It's my understanding that issue will now go to additional issues. But perhaps we can agree on the second recommendation in the memorandum. Hang on a second. I'll make sure I find it and word it properly. I move that the Commission find that the McCain-Palin Compliance Fund, Inc. failed to file 48-hour notices for contributions totaling $240,700 that were received prior to the general election.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That motion passes 6-0. Thank you. I think that concludes... Madam Vice Chair?
Actually, there's something else that requires a little bit of explanation, I think. There's an issue that was raised, and I'm sorry, this may be the first time that Mr. Sanderson is hearing about this, that was raised over a year ago at the preliminary audit report stage. And it goes to the reason why there's no finding in this audit report about the expenditure limit. The Commission had a debate on the treatment of hybrid ads. It's not a new issue for the Commission. It's an issue that the Commission has deadlocked on in the past and deadlocked on again at the preliminary audit report stage. Some of us would have preferred to have had it in the report so as to provide the committee with the opportunity to see the issue and respond to the issue. They didn't get that opportunity because it never made it into a report for lack of four votes. However, what we did vote to do back in September of 2011 was to place the preliminary audit report along with the cover memo and certain attachments on the public record, which explained this hybrid ad issue and the views of various commissioners on it. I think that was a unanimous vote. I think that's appropriate to have those documents on the public record to explain where commissioners were and why the expenditure limitation issue kind of evaporated. As I said, I would have preferred that we had been able to put it out there for for the committee to comment on. But I wouldn't want you to be completely surprised when these documents show up on the public record. Whoa, where did those come from? So that's where they came from, and those documents will be placed on the public record at the conclusion of the audit.
Anything else? Then the audit division will prepare the proposed final audit report and circulate that. Any other issues on this audit? If not, Ms. Orrick, are there any management and administrative matters to discuss?
There are none.
Hearing none, this meeting is adjourned. Thank you.